Hello, my name is Bill Cummings, and you're listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show.
Greetings and welcome to Show Me Magic, episode 6, with myself, Bill Cummings, and Jim Orton.
Hello.
It's a new music podcast from godisinthetvzine.co.uk. If you hadn't heard us before, we bring our new music that we're enjoying most, and we chat about it, and then we play some classics at the end, too. So, Jim, how are you doing?
Yeah, surviving.
Yeah. What week are we on now? Is it 5 or 6? I can't remember.
I'm on 6, lockdown, holding on to my sanity with my fingertips.
Like a lot of people, I think.
Exactly. Mind you, it gives you a lot of time to listen to new music, which is kind of very helpful with this pod.
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping to get some guests on, aren't we, soon?
Yeah.
Hopefully Angela from Bug Eye.
Yeah.
And you never know, Katie Malko may appear on this hallowed podcast. I've been enjoying a couple of albums this week by Choir Boy, who I played before.
Both
of these are out next week, and I Break Horses as well. Also played, so those two albums are kind of taking up a lot of my listening time, but loads of new music as well, as we're gonna show off on this episode. So what's your first pick, Jim?
My first pick is a band from Manchester. They're called Lottery Winners, and this is Love Will Keep Us Together.
Love will keep us together.
Okay, is it Lottery Winners and Love Will Keep Us Together? It's a kind of gospel and soul, almost baggy track, I thought.
It makes
a lot of sense when you say they're from Manchester.
Exactly, Jim.
That sound, mate?
It certainly harks back to that baggy Manchester days. You know, it doesn't stray far from the Happy Mondays sort of Black Grape sound with a bit of Primal Scream.
Primal Scream, I was thinking. Yeah.
Jimmy Delica era. So it's I really like it. It's a charity single. It's for the Believe, because obviously the B is the official mascot or signature for Manchester. But this charity called Believe, and this is a charity single. I think it's being it's a campaign led by Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester.
All right.
And the front man, Tom Rylance, he said, although this song was recorded a few months ago, I think the message is more prevalent now than ever. It's a song of positivity about the power of connection during bleak times, which I don't think anyone can argue with there. And I think that's probably one of the main things is that it's a very positive song. And I'm not always positive, and it's hard to be positive.
Yeah, sometimes you need like something just to pick you up, though, don't you? Mm-hmm. Kind of tune. As long as it's not car seat headrest, you know.
Anyway, what did you think?
I enjoyed it, but yeah, I definitely got the sort of Primal Scream, Screamadelica. Mm. I almost thought as well. I'm loath to continue to use comparisons, but maybe a bit of Blur Tender as well. You know, that kind of sing along quality.
Maybe and, yeah.
Anthemic. You know, the la la las and the sing along, the gospel choir. You know,
exactly. It's I mean, you know, if you're going to be cynical, you'd say that, you know, it's perfectly contrived for that kind of thing. But then, you know, why not? It's it doesn't feel particularly, you know, derivative of anything that's, you know, a similar kind of thing where I think you think it should be. It's like one of those songs, like, you know, when you first heard something like Let Me Entertain You by Robbie Williams, you thought that's been done before. That can't be him. But it's kind of one of those things where you think, you know, there must be something that's been done before, and maybe it's even a cover. I think I thought it was a cover when I first heard it, but apparently not. But it's nice. I mean, I don't know much about when. I think it's already out.
Maybe you can go download it on Bandcamp, because it's Bandcamp. It's Bandcamp day tomorrow again, where they're waiving the fees to artists. So yeah, support artists.
Definitely.
This difficult time.
They were saying that it was going to be a vinyl version was going to be available for the newly rescheduled Record Store Day on the 20th of June. But, of course, that was pulled yesterday, wasn't it? And they're doing this Record Store Day drops, which is going to happen in August, September and October. Sort of like Saturday at the end of that, where only a few of them are going to be open. And only certain titles are going to be available, which I think they said they're going to release details of that on the 1st of June, which is it's a shame that it's gone to the wall a bit, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you just got to make the best of the situation, difficult situation at the moment, haven't they?
Unfortunately, I think when bands and things like this have initially decided that they're going to push things back, but it's looking like they're not pushing it back far enough. There's gigs and things that fell because it was very early April and the end of March. So they said, oh, we'll reschedule for June and July, but it's not far enough. They're going to have to be rescheduling them now. I don't think anything's going to survive until at least October, November, but who knows?
Yeah, so what are we giving that one, Jim? What's your scores on the Doors?
I think for it's purely its positivity at this, you know, weird time, I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay, I quite enjoyed it. I wouldn't say the vocals are that unique.
No.
I heard a lot of that even in the mid-2000s, that kind of vocal style. However, I did quite enjoy the sort of upbeat nature of it. I'll give it a 7.
Cool.
So that's lottery winners with Love Will Keep Us Together. So now to me, isn't it?
Funnily enough, Bill.
Yeah. since there's only two of us this week. My first pick is RVG, and this is Alexandra.
Come Monday morning, you may find me dead. You may not find my body, but you may find my head in a motel closet. Or under a motel bed. Oh, this is the life that I lead. And you say, I saw it coming. It was only a matter of time.
that was RVG from their new album, Feral, out now on Fire Records. It's produced by Victor Van Vulgaert, who's also produced PJ Harvey, Nick Cave, Beth Orton, people like that. And yeah, I really like that. And it sort of simmers and trembles with a desire and a pain and a regret. It's the opener on the album, and there's a kind of sprawling quality to it and a sort of stream of consciousness that I quite liked. It kind of reminded me of bands like from the Australian past, like the Go-Betweens or the Triffids as well. Like that. Bands in that kind of sweet spot between post-punk and in the new wave era, the 80s.
Are they Australian?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what do you think, Jim?
I suppose that would explain sort of the lyrical content and then like that, because you just, I don't know whether you just, you know, I think I discussed this in the previous pod, where there's a kind of an idea of what Australia and Antipodeans are like, and it's all very much the nice weather and the surfing and the things like that. But when it gets a bit dark, like Loose Fit or something like that, you sort of automatically don't think this can't be anyone from Australia or something like that. Yeah. But I sort of pulled that lyric and said, they set fire to people that look like you do. And I said, it's almost like funny, but it's clearly got quite dark, sort of a dark edge, because obviously it's something, a bad experience has happened to them, because they clearly, because I think the lead singer is she non-binary, transgender?
Yeah, she's trans. Romy Vega.
Yeah.
I think that's where the name comes from, RVG, Romy Vega.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's trans. Yeah, I think there is quite a burning sort of injustice about it, isn't there? And the press release says an aching beauty whilst having a lyrical concern for the world around her.
Yeah.
So obviously I think a lot of the songs are sort of got that literary quality where they're concerned with characters.
Mm.
Maybe they're fictional, maybe they're real people that she's met, but it's interesting.
This is what I was wondering, whether this was either, you know, speaking in like the about another person, although really it's almost like talking about herself in the third person. It's really narrating her own experience.
But it all becomes mixed at some point, doesn't it?
You know, yeah.
Your experience and other people's experience. And that's art, isn't it, for you? I really like it because it's got that kind of almost the pop quality to it, even though it's a guitar song. It's that reminds me of sort of 80s bands, you know, that have that ambition.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It's sort of quite rousing and quite positive. I think even maybe if the lyrical context is sort of, maybe it's talking about a bad experience or trying to make something good out of it, you know, even if the lyrical context doesn't completely express that, it sort of feels like it's trying to be positive about it and sort of put out a good impression of where that person is or something. But I know I enjoyed that. I like that.
The album's interesting as well. So what do you give that one, Jim?
I'll give that 7.5.
That's your standard. Like, it's good, but it's not quite excellent, isn't it?
Exactly.
I'll give it an 8 because I do actually really like that. And it did grow on me a lot, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Back to you, I believe.
It is. Yeah, so up next for me, my second newbie is an old band, Silver Sun, but a new album is called Photograph.
In ancient times, we forgot to be with you. On Friday nights, we bought a drink or two. Moments cold and found, I finally knew. Hazy ancient eyes will see it too. So slow, a little every year.
Sun, for those of a younger disposition, they were a late 90s band. They sort of appeared just after Britpop. Their debut album, the eponymous debut album, came out in 97, the summer of 97. And for me personally, the golden summer of 1997, as I saw them at a couple of festivals around that time. And that debut album, it completely epitomises summer for me, along with the likes of Fountains of Wayne, which obviously, unfortunately, poor old Adam Slinger, passed away with COVID. But I don't think, you know, it's sort of he's prevalent now that he's come back. It's well, it's really sort of just the lead singer and rhythm guitarist James Broad, who was the main songwriter back in the day as well. He does it all sort of really sort of on his own. He lives down in the West Country, down in Cornwall, Devon, Cornwall way, and he does a lot of it on his own. So it sort of takes a while. I'm sure I've heard this as a demo like a year or so ago, because he used to put a lot of stuff on SoundCloud. But this is now his fully realised album that he'd finished mastering last month, obviously with a bit of time on his hand. It's called Switzerland, but it's his first album for a couple of years. So he's still knocking them out. But they have got, they did reform, I think it was last year, it might have been the year before, because they supported Sleeper just for one gig in London. Because I think they are from London and North London, Camden way originally, and a lot of them still were from that area. But they supported Sleeper and then did a late night one for Starshaped, the club that do also the festivals, the Britpop club. But he's been sort of plugging away. So, and I think a few of the drummer and the guitarist still feature on some of the songs on the new album. But he can't do a huge amount wrong in my eyes. They're not always quite to the peak of their first two albums, the Silver Sun and Neo Wave. But he's a bit like the 90s Brian Wilson for me. Literally, the sun shines out of him.
I remember them, and I remember them. I'm sure they supported Blur at one point.
Quite possibly.
And yeah. I'm sure I remember them also being on a Shine, an edition of Shine, you know, yeah. Compilation series.
Well, I think they cracked at least the top 10, maybe even higher, maybe a top five single in about 98, around that time, 99, for their second album, because they did a cover of Too Little Too Too Much, Too Little Too Late.
Yeah.
Which they had like, a video that was being getting quite heavy rotation on MTV.
Top 20, I've just looked up.
Oh, it's just top 20, I couldn't remember. But yeah, and this kind of has a similar sort of vibe to that. It's not their sort of heavy, but more of a loud guitar, poppy, but sort of Weezer-esque sort of guitar sort of thing.
Yeah, going Weezer, they were another one, yeah.
But that Too Much, Too Little Too Late was, and this is kind of a bit more sort of lazy Sunday afternoon type thing, but I really like this. He describes it himself as one of the best things he's written for a long time, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that, but the album still is really good, and I'm really glad he's still doing this kind of thing, because I loved them in the late 90s. But
I can hear the quality of the songwriting, you know. I wouldn't say it's like stood out to me as a track, but they're big on melodies, aren't they? They're big on harmonies and stuff. You know?
It's very much a West Coast Beach Boys thing, but yeah. Coming out of North London and now the West Coast of England.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of these sort of bands from the 90s coming back, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever really gone away properly, and it's not something that's going to get a huge amount of heavy rotation, because he does it for the love of it and the fun of it. But, you know, he's still doing it, still under Silver Sun. They're still there or thereabouts, but it's not. I don't think we can expect any grand reunion, unfortunately.
Well, there you go. Silver Sun and Photograph?
Yeah.
What are you giving that one?
I'm giving that an 8. I'm feeling positive today.
You're feeling positive. I'll give it a 7 as well. Did you see the Indie All-Stars doing a version of Chasing Rainbows?
I did. I watched that this morning. Oh, no.
Pretty bad. I mean, it varied, didn't it? The quality, it just looked like a load of guys on Zoom or something, didn't it?
And, yeah. Which, you know, it's to be expected under current circumstances. But
I mean, the thoughts there, but some of them were absolutely terrible, weren't they?
I love the Northern Uproar guy just lounging on his sofa. I don't think he's sung anything for a good few years. But some of them have still got it. Old, what's his name, Dean from Menswear. I can never, I want to say
Jim Johnny Dean. Yeah.
Dean, yeah.
I'm friends with him on Facebook, yeah.
We know Rick Witter's still got the pipes, but if I'm perfectly honest with you, he wasn't showcasing it on his little cameo at the end with his own song. seemed to be completely out of key. It was a bit weird. But
yeah, it's very hard to sound good on a Skype. And it was quite funny they had the guy from the Zootons playing in his in his hallway.
And it was also as if Dave McCabe, it's just right. As if he hadn't actually heard the song before.
No, I know.
Bless him. But
I was a little bit desperate, but
I love to think he's in his hallway of his house that he's called Valerie.
Yeah, there's a lot of these. Did you hear the Foo Fighters one as well?
I've heard sort of bits and bobs about days like these.
It's okay. It's
one of these days or whatever it's called.
I don't know. There's too many of them, I think.
Yeah.
I'm actually involved in a mad one at the moment, which will probably have seen the light of day by the time this comes out. It's called the Indoor Mortal Orchestra. Obviously a pun on the Unknown Mortal Orchestra. Yes. And it's a load of artists and comedians who are getting together to do a Bugsy Malone song and then release it as charity single. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. It should be interesting.
Mark Watson.
Say No More. Yeah, it's to do with Mark Watson's 24-hour... Watson-a-thon, he calls it. It's like a comedy marathon.
He normally does it for comic relief, doesn't he?
Yeah, he asks people to do various tasks, and this time one of the tasks is going to be to find singers and things like that. So, ridiculously famous ones. I mean,
it's hard to be too cynical or harsh about something that's for a good cause, so good luck to him.
All right, moving on. Yeah, it's Weirdo and Eurotrash.
Jean-Mabel, weirdo. Do you care that I've come back though?
Nah.
Send me a message cause you missed me. Or maybe not cause you've been busy. But I got something you don't wanna miss. This is the countdown to apocalypse. I am the other one, alternative. The weirdest words are coming off my lips. Hello, my nama, it's Weirdo. I wrote this song, but will you listen though? Spin the record, baby, play a bit. If nothing else, then it's an ego trip. Now I got something you don't want to miss. This is the countdown to another hit. You are the other one, alternative. The weirdest moves are coming from your hips.
Was Weirdo with Eurotrash. It's Weirdo's attitude and outlook on the world at the moment with all the things going on and his kind of tongue-in-cheek attitude to a world in crisis. I suppose it's kind of lightening the mood, really. It's quite playful and a bit of a homage to the 80s with a bit of French electro influence as well, I think.
Yeah, well, very much so, yeah.
Quite like how playful it is and how it doesn't really take itself too seriously.
Oh, quite. Is it indicative of anything else they've done before? Because I didn't get around to looking, but it sort of felt like maybe it was they're doing a pastiche to yeah. this very kind of Euro pop thing from that, you know, with an very 80s. So,
and when it gets into the chorus, it sort of goes more like almost Prince, I thought, almost, you know, not quite as good, but it goes into that chorus kind of line, you know.
I mean, the fact that it's called Euro Trash, I sort of felt like at any point, maybe Jean-Paul Gaultier or Antoine de Cowan suddenly make a
swan around
and like that, or they'll be in the video.
PP and Popo would approve.
Yeah.
No, I just like how sort of like playful it is.
There's something about kind of, there's that 80s electronic drum thing, but it's almost like the sound of a dripping tap, kind of like that sound of, it's like, I don't know, I don't want to make the noise, but that kind of very sort of like gentle noise, but it's kind of like a drum beat, but it's hard. And they have that in that, and I've always liked that, which is kind of one thing that kind of drew me to it as well, more than it would normally. But it's a bit of fun. I was wondering if it was a kind of a pastiche, and that's not really what they do. Yeah, quite so French Euro pop, but you know, but it's almost like a bit of a sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing, or whether it is.
Yeah, it may have been thrown together during this crisis, you know.
Okay.
As a way of lightening the mood, you know.
Yeah.
Because it says here that he was in it during a creative block. He is English, so it's kind of a sideways twist on the Europop thing, isn't it? Anyway, I'm going to give Weirdo 7.5.
I'll go with 7.
Yeah. Okay, moving on swiftly. We've got your choice now, Jim.
Yeah, my last new music choice, which it's something that I think they've just sort of announced fairly recently, but it's come off an EP that was out a few weeks ago. This is Do Nothing and Contraband.
It is a big thing. Do not play it down. You are my people and I care about you. I'll have a pint of you, please. Thank you very much. Why would you do such an ugly thing to us? I'm confident. Yes, we will catch that low.
Nothing and Contraband, kind of an abrasive almost unhinged quality to that one, Jim, I thought.
Yeah, it's as is something, you know, as is our want on this pod, especially mine, a lot of the time, we're doing, it's got the post-punk sort of bent on it. They're a Nottingham band, which they're quite hyped. I remember hearing them on another Recommends podcast that has a spherical table.
That we've in no way copied or anything.
Not in any way, shape, or form. No, quite. That they.
But actually, we're the only ones doing it at the moment. So,
well, exactly.
We're the true heirs to the throne.
We're taking over. They're quite hyped, and everyone loved them on that. And they've done a few bits and pieces, and they've supported and played. I saw them with a Desperate Journalist not that long ago, earlier in the year. But they're an interesting band. It's a little bit sort of similar to what other bands are doing, a bit similar to the likes of Egyptian Blue that we've had on, but they're sort of a bit higher in the pecking order, maybe. I do like the fact that their guitar's it's got that collapsible Libertines-esque kind of, where at any point they'll fall into chaos. And it's a very, you know, the talky vocal thing's quite on vogue at the moment, but there's just something a bit more about them. They're a bit more interesting. The video is a bit bizarre, but I really enjoy it. It's another pop punk one, but I wanted something that I really, really liked.
Yeah, it's funny you said that about art rock. It kind of reminded me going back into the 2000s, you know, when there was an art rock scene around New Cross, especially with likes of Art Brut, Block Party, all those kind of bands. And the vocals actually did remind me a little bit of Art Brut.
Maybe
intersecting with more of the post-punk, shouty post-punk thing that's going on at the moment. But yeah, I did think it had slightly more to it than some of the bands you've brought from that shouty post-punk scene.
It sort of feels like that kind of thing is prevalent, but
are there too many though? Are there too many? Because
they're named too many, but at least
I said to somebody, oh, we're doing a podcast or whatever, and they said, oh, are you doing any of that shouty post-punk stuff? There's too much of it around at the moment. I said, I'll bring that up on the pod because Jim loves a bit of that. So
I am. It's appealing to me at the moment. I just think, you know, that kind of slightly unhinged, angry, angular thing is just speaks to me at the moment. It's all a bit weird. And I maybe come the summer, if everything's been lifted, I'll be listening to my 80s pop singles again, and I'll be putting all my Smiths records away.
Sometimes, though, you do want that kind of release, don't you? And some of these bands, I think, do give that release, you know, a primal thing, isn't it? Almost?
Yeah, absolutely. I think possibly Egyptian Blue are doing it a bit better at the moment. That Romeo's Return EP was brilliant. This close behind. If they were playing together, I'd be first in the queue. Well, obviously, 2 meters away from the next person.
I picked out a line, will you still love me if my hair falls out? Which is a worry of all middle-aged men, really, isn't it? Including myself.
You know,
because I am thinning myself.
But I think more to the point at the moment is that, will you still love me because I've had my head shaved?
Will you still love me because I'm 2 stone heavier than I was before lockdown?
Going off on a massive tent. Yeah.
So what do you give that one, Jim? What's your verdict on that one?
I really like that again, and I'm feeling unduly positive. I'm a beer down as well, but an 8.
I'll give it a 7.5, just because, you know, I think it's got something, but I do think there are too many of these bands around at the moment, and I do wonder if it is because of the Idols effect, you know.
I can see.
But then I would say that they've got maybe something musically a bit more interesting.
I think there's a possibility that the Idols effect is, again, what is that effect?
I think a lot of labels and bands, or a lot of labels have gone out and gone, we've got to find another Idols. A lot of bands have gone, we've got to go down that route, you know?
So. Is it a hangover from the whole Britpop thing where everyone was trying to sign the new Oasis or Blur or Pulse? Yes. And an A&R guy is just going, well, Idols are big. Is anyone else doing something similar, but sort of along a post-punk bent? Because then you have Fontaine's DC, Shame, all that kind of thing.
That's how it works in music, mate. And it's not just Britpop. It's gone on for years.
No, exactly. But it's kind of like that, sign anything that sounds similar. We'll get some hits, some screws.
Well, people who are in other bands, they start going, I think we'll form a new band. that kind of sounds, you know, kind of goes down that alleyway, you know. Back to me, isn't it?
It's your last.
A bit of Welsh. We're going to the Welsh Northern districts. Okay, this is Kid Smoke and The Bluest You. Kid Smoke and The Bluest You, and I really like that. It's sort of evocative, kind of gaze pop, really, I guess. It's got that kind of melancholic air to it and atmosphere, and the guitars at the end are excellent. I kind of get a bit of Ride, a bit of a bit of Teenage Fan Club, maybe even, and it's kind of really well done, and it's quite different to what they've done before, which shows a palette that they're showing off in their music, you know. You tell me what you think and I'll tell you what it's about.
Well, I thought it was quite a nice sort of mix. Like you say, with Ride, it was kind of a shoegazy, sort of mixed between shoegazy and a bit more of a pop jangly side of it. So like I said, if it's sort of a bit like Ride and a bit like Teenage Fan Club, but yeah, that kind of shoegazy kind of thing, but a bit more on the pop side of it. It's not quite so, you know, staring at your shoes, navigating kind of thing. I kind of was going to get more of like the sort of mid-80s sort of jangle as well, though.
Yeah.
But there was, but almost like in the minor chords in a way, I've sort of got quite a big, this joke isn't funny anymore, Smith's Johnny Marr guitar vibe from it. Just the kind of reverby guitar, sort of quite minor chordy, but, you know, but still quite jangly. And that's one of my favourite Smith songs as well. So that it did appeal to me.
That makes sense. And they say that the song is about, it's a fly on the wall look into a household where one person's depression is affecting everyone else who lives there. Right. So it's kind of that heavy atmosphere, you know,
yeah,
the bluest you know, that kind of bringing everyone, you know, that kind of atmosphere that brings everyone down, you know, if somebody's feeling down. But it's quite prescient at the moment when everyone's stuck inside. Wow. And mental health problems are shooting through the roof and everything. So, it's their first single on Libertino Records. Obviously, we played a lot of, artists from that stable before. They're one of the best labels in Wales at the moment. They're bringing out likes of Adwaith, Silent Forum, Club Fuzz, who've been on the pod before. And there's going to be an album promised in 2020. I've really liked Kid Smoke for quite a while. I interviewed them last year. We saw them in the Welsh Club as well. They were really good. Their last single was much more like sort of widescreen power pop almost. So okay. This one is showing off a darker, more contemplative side, ruminative side. But like you said, it's still got that pop undercurrent to it. Yeah, and I quite liked it. And it sort of grew on me as well because it wasn't what I was expecting from them. But then it showed, you know, another string to their bow. So,
you say quite a broad palette then, really.
Yeah.
I'll have to check out what they've done previously. Because have they been around for a little while then? Or was this?
Yeah, they released the run of singles on an American label. The last one was called She Takes Me Under, and it was almost like Gigolo Ants. You ever heard of them?
Yeah, because they did the theme for
When I Find My Heaven.
When I Find My Heaven on their Game On. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great song.
That kind of power pop, but it's got that kind of gaze
indie
thing as well. And like you said, it's got that kind of appreciation of melody as well.
Absolutely.
He says that he was a live favourite of theirs, and then he sort of was listening to a lot of The National at the time. And so he went down that kind of more melancholic air and when he wrote the lyrics. So there you go. That's how it came about. So Kid Smoke and The Bluest You, what are you going to give that one, Jim?
7.5.
Okay, I'm going to go for the 8 on that one because I really like that one. And I think it shows they're a good band.
When it's our tune, we're giving it an 8.
It's not. I gave Weirdo. I gave him a 7.5.
Oh, I gave it a 7.9. Yeah, okay. That blows that theory out of the water.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. You're more likely to get a good score, aren't you? Because you picked it. So I'm not handing out many nines, though. Not handing out many nines. Although, you say that.
Yes. There is still time.
Okay. Going on to the classics now, aren't we? I'm going to kick off the classic chat. And this is my pick. This is Ladytron, and this is Destroy Everything You Touch.
Destroy me this way. Nothing you touch, you don't feel.
That was Lady Tron, like a tank coming over the horizon, steamrolling everything in its path, with shooting laser beams out of their eyes. Yeah, no, it's a cracking pop song, and it should have been a much bigger hit than it was. It was kind of in the early 2000s. I just think it's an absolute blockbusting tune, and it was sort of it got to 43 or something in the charts, criminally. And you can imagine, I was listening to their album last week because we did a sort of listen party on a music group I'm on the album Witching Hour, which this came from 2005. Yeah, every song was really good, and every song it had a different element to it, and
yeah,
I just think, well, they're one of those bands that are quite criminally underrated, because lots of the songs on the album, you can imagine, say, Alison Goldfrapp had sung them, or say, Kylie had sung it, it would be a mega hit. So,
I
think the songwriting is very, very, very good. Very good.
Well, yeah, as I say, Goldfrapp was one of the ones I was thinking of before. But also, sort of for that period of time, it almost feels like it's something that could have not a copy, but you think it might be able to piggyback the that era Madonna. You kind of had music and sort of Ray of Light. I don't know if that was a bit earlier. I'm not big on my chronological Madonna hits, but it sort of felt a bit like that. You think that would be able to sort of piggyback on that, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly a disco stomp. It's one of those ones that, you know, you'd hear blasting out of a club on something.
Got that kind of superhero vibe to it, I think, whenever I hear it. The sort of plaintive melodies against the kind of euphoric synths and drum beats and everything. And they actually are playing live drums as well. I know you've got a thing about, process drums. They actually have got a live band on this album. And it is their best album as well, Witching Hour from 2005. But they're an interesting band because they're from Liverpool. But they've got a sort of Eastern European influence.
Yeah.
I really like it. And I think it's one of those like lost classics, definitely, that it could have been a bigger hit. When you think something like Can't Get You Out of My Head or whatever was a massive hit. Maybe it's a bit harsher than that. Maybe it's a bit colder than that. But you know, there was a lot of electronic pop around that time that was big. Yeah, well, actually, Lady Tron, after this, they were picked up to work with Christina Aguilera, would you believe?
I can't see that. I can't, you know, that Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears are more of your just like pop.
But they take influence from wherever, don't they?
I didn't think. They just churned them out, didn't they? And it wasn't... Yeah. They sometimes did a few interesting things, but, you know, they didn't feel like they'd ever go that far. Like Madonna,
obviously, Lady Tron are named after a Roxy Music song.
Yes.
And, they're very inspired, obviously, by Kraftwerk and stuff like that, you know. The album's interesting because it sort of surfs the thing of electropop, new wave, and a bit of shoegaze even on some of the songs. Quite an interesting mixture. And I think that's a belting tune, personally. I mean, I've been playing it a lot recently. The title kind of goes with where we're at as well, touching things and destroying things. But yeah, it could almost be like a superhero movie, I reckon. But maybe
No, I can see that on a montage of them.
Yeah,
going off for
Hulk smashers and
save the day.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to give that a 9 because I think that's a belting pop tune. Okay. But what say you, Jim?
Well, I've been positive, so I'll give it a 7.
I talked you up there. Your classic's still going to win because you're cheating again.
Why am I cheating?
It's funny because Andy said to me, he said, you said to Jim that he was cheating, and then Jim said no, and then he went, still cheating like that, under my breath.
He did. He said it wasn't very under your breath.
Going back to you for our final classic, Jim.
Yeah. So I sort of feel like he gets lauded by all and sundry, but I don't know whether people really know his music that well. So I've gone for the utter genius that is Nick Drake, and this is Riverman.
Betty came by on her way, said she had a word to say about things today and fallen leaves. Said she hadn't heard the news, hadn't had the time to choose a way to lose, but she believed. Gonna see the river man, gonna tell him all I can about the plan for lilac time. If he tells me all he knows about the way his river flows, night shows in summertime. Said she prayed today for the sky to blow away, or maybe stay. She wasn't sure. For when she thought of summer rain calling for her mind again, lost the pain and stayed for love. Gonna see the river man, gonna tell him all I can about the band. If he tells me all he knows about the way his river flows, I don't suppose it's meant for me.
So that was Nick Drake and Riverman from his album Five Leaves Left, I believe.
Left, yeah.
It's actually my favourite one. Yeah, Riverman's a great track. I mean, his voice, I always think Nick Drake's voice sounds like he's sort of almost exhaling.
It's
got that kind of comfort to it, but also that kind of world weariness to it.
It's hard to say with Nick whether or not that's my favourite album, that it's One Love, Five Leaves Left, or is it, you know, Another Day, It's Pink Moon, or is it Brighter Later? He was unappreciated in his time, but became more appreciated through some of the sort of the people come up and coming out of the 70s. Paul Weller's a very big advocate for him, but I think you ask anyone sort of that has ever picked up a guitar after 1973, and I think fair to say that he has influenced them. But it just, do people know his actual stuff that well? He sort of appears in adverts and movies occasionally, but that's just, you know, beautiful. It's just stunning. You know, if you feel anxious, if you feel, you know, a bit too wired or you're unhappy or whatever, put Nick Drake on. And even there's something like Pink Moon, the way on Pink Moon, which was when he was at his darkest point, it's still just ridiculously comforting, his voice, his guitar playing, because it's just he invented a new way of playing guitar that no one else can really match, and all has matched since. And it's, he, you know, he was an unappreciated genius.
Yeah, just reading here that Pink Moon and
Brighter Later,
only sold 5,000 copies on initial release. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and this is the day when you would sell 20,000 copies, you know.
Yeah, and he died when he was 26, which is criminal, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an amazing documentary that his sister. But she was part of it, and it was a lot of it was about his relationship with his parents and her in their family home in the Midlands. But he you know, bummed around a bit when he was at private school, and then at Cambridge, and he was in the south of France, where he basically learned to play guitar. And people like Robert Kirby and talk about how he basically wowed them by his style of playing guitar, and he just.
Yeah.
No one knew about these tunings. They weren't necessarily open tunings. He just what he wanted it to sound like. And it's a great documentary, and I can't remember the name of it at the moment, so we might need to crowbar that in.
Yeah, maybe. there's been a few on Nick Drake. There has been.
Yeah.
There was a couple on BBC4 a few years ago that were excellent. But, yeah, his playing is sort of evocative, isn't it? And it goes with his voice so well. Yeah. And the arrangements as well on that album are particularly subtle and beautiful, really. I've always loved the song Waiter Blue. That's one of my favorites.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And Northern Sky as well. That's another one I love.
Yeah.
But, I've always really liked this track. And it was on a compilation that I had years ago called Chill Out. That came with Q or something like that. And it had like things like Talk Talk on it, Groove Armada, you know. And Nick Drake, so yeah, something about his voice. There's kind of a majesty to it, but also a kind of resigned quality, isn't there?
Yeah, it's
like I'm not long for this world, really.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's heartbreaking, especially if you sit there and listen to something like Pink Moon, his last album, and you think that he died not long after that was completed and released, and. The state he was in, even when recording that, about how incredible those songs are, that he was still able to create that kind of thing when he was sort of his lowest ebb. But, it is one of those tragedies of music. And unfortunately, you know, he wasn't appreciated, couldn't handle it. Because you hear these stories of him supporting the likes of Fairport Convention in the early 70s and Linda and Richard Thompson and things. And because he had to tune his guitar after every single song, because it was a different tuning, he'd sit there in silence and he just wouldn't be able to, you know, he had no stage patter. He's a shy man. And, you know, even with his friends, he wouldn't talk a huge amount. And just can't, you know, these days he'd have seven guitars. They'd pass him a new one and he'd be godlike. But he was at the wrong time.
There's stories of that throughout musical history, aren't there? I mean, somebody like Jeff Buckley, for example, is similar sort of tale, really.
Yeah.
Who wasn't appreciated in life and his career and stuff like that. And even somebody you brought in last week, Eves, is it?
Yeah.
I know he's not dead, but obviously the fact that people are underappreciated, aren't they?
Yeah,
and it's about a series of luck. It's not just about, you know, how good your songs are or whatever. There's often a series of luck, happenstance, you know, whether you met the right person at the right time. There's all sorts of reasons why somebody becomes successful, you know. Yeah. It's not always about the talent. So that's kind of, I think that is the tale of somebody like Nick Drake.
That is, yeah. The documentary is called A Skin Too Few, and his sister was Gabrielle Drake. I recommend watching that. But yeah. I mean, I felt like, you know, it's something that I put on Five Leaves Left the other day, and especially when you feel anxious, like anyone would at this time, and you're housebound and it just all gets a bit much, and that
climbing the walls,
exactly, it just calms you amazingly down. And I just thought, at the very least, people might start listening to him again if they've already heard of him. But
yeah, and there's a lot of with his songs, there's a lot of like sense of space as well. When I was listening to it the other day as well, I was thinking, actually, this is putting me in mind of like people who like lying around smoking funny cigarettes in the 70s as well. Yeah. Like you said, there is a kind of almost like a psychedelic quality to it, because it's so,
yeah,
it's the kind of so evocative. It's got that spiritual almost element to it, a mystical quality. Anyway, you've discussed it to death. I'm going to I'm going to give it a 9. Because I do really like that track. It's not my favourite Nick Drake, but it's still absolute peerless quality. What say you, Jim?
I think I feel like I can't give it my second consecutive classic.
Cheating!
So I'm not, but I don't think we've had a 9.5 on the pods.
What would 9.5 be? I was thinking about this the other day in your 7.5, because what does 7.5 mean?
No.
It's really splitting hairs, isn't it?
It is very much so. It's kind of because you don't want to say 7, but you don't want to say 8. So you want to say 9. So what is 9.5?
Do you want to go into 7.75 or something? You know.
No, I'll stick with my 9.5. Oh. I'll bring something crap in next week.
No, it's quite easy to win with Nick Drake, though. That's the thing.
It is a bit.
That's why it's cheating. Would it be worth chatting about the Oasis track?
Yeah.
Should we have a little listen to it?
2, 3, 2, 2, 3. Bye bye, my friend. I'm leaving. I'm gonna feel.
Gallagher said the only previous recording was made in a sound check in Hong Kong about 15 years ago. Liam put, well, there's something missing in this God Almighty stew. It's your brother. Don't forget. Because he also put that if it hasn't got Liam, it hasn't got me singing on it and Boned playing on it, which is quite funny because Boned wasn't in the band for years, was he? Then it's not Oasis, he said.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. I think Oasis is one of those bands that they appeal to people who weren't really into music, if that makes sense. No, that's not actually a criticism because a lot of people who were into music like them as well. What I'm trying to say is they had that universality of appeal, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That most guitar bands up until that point hadn't had.
No.
They had that crossover appeal, you know? Obviously, Blur had a bit of it, but what I'm trying to say is that they had that everyman thing.
They did, yeah. No,
Definitely Maybe was just a stonking album. It was a stonking album when it came out. It was like blowing up in the Doors, you know? It was, because when you heard it, it was just like, right, literally like brazen, just, you know, the swagger, the attitude and everything. And all of those things now you could look back and say, oh, well, actually they were prats. But, you know, that's benefit of hindsight is great. You know,
well, exactly. But
back then, it was a way of, it was a superhuman confidence that they had in themselves that they were going to do it. The thing is, though, a lot of that arrogance or confidence that they had, I think a lot of it was like a bravado, you know, a way of blustering their way through it. I think they got a lot of that from the Stone Roses, because the Stone Roses used to say we're the biggest band in the world, and so, or we're the best band in the world or whatever. So if you say it enough times and you start believing it, then you can make it a reality kind of thing. But yeah, like you said, it wouldn't happen at the moment because guitar music is just not at the center of culture anymore.
But then I suppose it wasn't then, was it, back in 1994? No. Wade was starting to build, and Blur weren't at their pinnacle. I mean, Parklife was the same time as Definitely Maybe, wasn't it? Because after that came The Great Escape when Morning Glory. So before that, you had probably their pinnacle was probably Modern Life is Rubbish. But yeah, it was the sort of the perfect storm, because I think Blur alienated a certain side of the, you know, of that Oasis Blur demographic. Because, and Suede weren't going to appeal to the same people that liked Oasis, you know, with all the best will in the world. And they're great.
Think about it now. It was all so cliched, though, wasn't it? Because it was like, oh, we're the working class people and you're the middle class people, when really it wasn't that simple, really.
No, and it was all contrived by companies and AR.
The whole Blur vs. Oasis thing was just a real comedy, really. But really, I suppose what happened was that Blur won the chart battle, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then Oasis won the album battle, the wider battle. They won the war. Yeah, they became the bigger band, didn't they, eventually? I always felt like Oasis lost some of their... But when they moved to London and kind of like...
Yeah.
You could feel like half of like What's the Story, Morning Glory is still Oasis. But then you could feel there's a tipping point with Be Here Now and maybe some of the stuff afterwards, where they just got so obsessed with their own fame. You know, they were so lost in their own fame that Noel sort of like lost touch with reality. I think he just thought whatever he could do, whatever he did, whatever he shout out was, you know, Midas, you know, was gold.
It
wasn't, unfortunately. But when you're imbibing that much cocaine, then you think it is, don't you?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's what the problem with Be Here Now is, because there's a lot of stuff on there that was still cracking, and it is what it is. You know, you can't change it. You're not going to go down and Let It Be Naked kind of thing. He's not going to strip it. It is what it is, and there are some great songs on there still.
What do you actually think of this? I mean, I think it just sounds like a B-side, to be honest. I mean,
It does. You know, it's a demo, isn't it?
And you think to yourself, you know, does it really need to be out there? Is it essential? You know, I mean, it's okay. It's nice enough, but
we're living in a different world.
I feel a bit like Noel Gallagher's a bit of an egotist, to be honest. Like, I wonder if there's something behind it. Forgive me for being cynical. I wonder if there's another reissue behind this, or, you know. You don't just find the demo and put it out there when you know Gallagher, I'm afraid. I'm sorry to be cynical, but...
No, I know, I get that, but I don't think there's necessarily...
A standing on the shoulders of giants reissue.
Well,
maybe coming up.
It's the next one to go.
20 years, isn't it? So,
I think it is 20 years, isn't it? So, well, maybe, but I think more to the point, he is Noel Gallagher, and he's gone, oh, look at me, you know, I found this CD with this demo, and I'll go, well, you know, I'm going to put it out. Because he knows he'll get lapped up. He's got to He's got an audience, and he is who he is, and he's still got the support. And even if you say, oh, from the Oasis point of view, when it was a demo from 15, 20 years ago, I was in Oasis. So you're still going to get those Liam fans, because that's becoming a bit of a thing, isn't it? It's you either Liam or you're Noel.
Yeah. Oh, that's been a thing for a long time, I think.
And it's not great, and it's not terrible, but it's
a B-side, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you've got Masterplan, which is their B-side's album. There's a lot of those kind of contemplative ballads on there, you know.
Yeah, and he was still churning that kind of stuff out, and even like in his early part of his solo career.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cliched lyrics on it about the sun, and, you know.
He always likes that.
It's quite Oasis by numbers, really, I thought, to be honest.
It is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, and it's not as bad as some of his solo stuff that he's been churning, which has been bloody awful. You know, the rest of them.
I just lost interest, to be honest.
I got the first three, and I quite like the first three. I mean, they don't necessarily stand up with after a while, but these EPs are just rubbish, really dreadful.
Yeah, didn't he go more down a dance direction or something?
Well, he took, because he's been working with David Holmes, hasn't he? And that third album was about him going in with nothing and writing. And there were some good songs in there. I mean, I really like Holy Mountain. A lot of people don't, but I don't really care.
Anyway, so what do we think? We got off for a right tangent on Oasis, but what do you think on this one, Don't Stop? What are we giving this out of? What are you giving this out of 10?
I'm in a positive mood, so I'll give it a 6.5. I don't, it's a bit monotonous.
Wishy-washy, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what it reminded me actually of? Like a Verve demo or something, you know, with that psychedelic backdrop, you know?
It's a bit
inconsequential, really, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And that's why it's a demo, ultimately. I mean, some of the lyrics, like "Lazy days and sunny rays will guide me back home to where I belong." I mean,
what
you've heard that all before, haven't you? You know, it's just inessential, really. I mean, you know, but I do wonder if it is like sort of teasing a reissue of Stand on the Shoulders of Giants with a load of demos on it, you know?
Maybe.
Which might be interesting, actually. Which might actually be interesting. But for this, I'm going to give it a 5.
Fair enough.
I don't think it's... I mean, I only listened a couple of times, but...
No, I haven't.
It doesn't really pick up and grab me, you know? But then that's a demo for you, isn't it?
Exactly.
All right, mate. Good chat. And, okay, I'll just do a little outro. Yeah. Oh. All right, thanks for listening to the 6th episode of Show Me Magic with myself, Bill Cummings, and Jim Orton. Hopefully next episode, Angela's going to join us from Bug Eye, and we may have some more guests in the future. Check out all the bands that we played today and artists in the description below. Till the next time, ta-da!
See you later.
You've been listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show. Check out more on godisinthetvzine.co.uk. We're on our Twitter page, God Is in the TV. We're also on Facebook, God Is in the TV Zine with a dot. Thanks for listening. Until the next time, ta-da.